obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
It's so relaxing. It's a feeling I've never gotten at any other conference. And she's been to a few with me. And I've been around a long time, and I've had the great privilege to go to a lot of these all over the North American continent, even over the pond. But I have to say this, and I really mean it. I have never, and I've been to this one a number of times. Like Bonnie, I've had the privilege, this is the third time to speak, but I've been here other times too. I've never been to one as well organized and as much fun with so many people involved that really care and love you. And I thank you for that, every one of you. And I'm going to tell you why that is, and you already know it. Now, you've heard the story, and Jerry talked a little about it Friday night, about a group of them sitting around Thanksgiving dinner. And out of that came the South Bay Roundup. But this is a family disease, and it's a family recovery. Yeah. And I've never been to a conference where it comes through like that more than this conference. And the reason why, look around you. Look around you at the banners. If you weren't here Friday night, every group within this area, be it Alcoholics Anonymous, be it Al-Anon, be it Alateen, walked across this stage. And all of them are involved. And you know that's what we're all about. And that's why this conference is the way it is. And that's why the fire is still burning and will always burn. Because all of you are involved. And God love you for that. The Maryland Choir. Dave did this. He did it for me. He had them on Friday night. Now, most of the choir may not know this, but I want to tell you. 49 years and 2 months ago, I was a dishwasher at the Bimini. And the Maryland Foundation was founded by an ex-cop named Pat Wigger. And he was mean and he was tough and he didn't like me. And I will talk a little later about that because I got off an airplane in 1964 and came out of a blackout in the middle of the summer. And I became a street person. And back then, the Maryland Foundation had the Bimini and the Royal Palms. They're still around today. They had the Shoreham. The Shoreham's gone. You've got some other facilities. And I was put out of all of them more than once. Because I continue to drink wine. But when these two men on March the 5th came to a maintenance shack and unlocked the door, and members of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had not called them, and the bottle had beaten me to death, they took me to the only detox place in Los Angeles on Fairfax Avenue. And Pat Wigger had said he never wanted to see me again. And when they let me out of that place, these two men convinced him to let me go back to the Bimini. And you know, I became a dishwasher and I became a good one. And I was there a long time. So I love you guys. You have a special, special meaning to me. And thank you for being here this morning. I'm a Californian by residence, a Kentuckian by birth, and an alcoholic by absorption. I drank as much as I could for as long as I could, and the bottle almost killed me. And I was young. 52 years ago, this past Christmas Day, I came out of a blackout and I did not know it was Christmas Day. I did not know where I was. I was on the south side of Atlanta, Georgia, rolled up in the fetal position, desperate. And out of college, I'd gone to work for a company where there was a man employed, and they whispered that he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wanted nothing to do with him. But I can tell you, a few years later, when I came to that Christmas morning, I looked in the phone book and I called. And he and his wife came to get me. And they brought me through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. And that wasn't my last drink. My story is your story, and I've heard it all weekend. All weekend. We're all alike on the inside. We all drank and used for all of the same reason. Doesn't matter what our stories are. And at the bottom of all that, I'd never examined any of it. I had no idea that at the bottom of all of it, it was fear-based. None. I came into the world in a family that had a lot of love. I'm an only child. I was given a lot of love. I was given every advantage that a human could ever want in life, and it was never enough. They talked to me early in life about attitudes. They talked to me as my disease progressed about attitudes. They talked to me about a lot of different things that went in one ear and out the other. They talked to me a lot about potential. Oh, did I hear that a lot? You've got great potential. But I am convinced in the lessons I have learned in life, I've had to look back in retrospect. I have to get out beyond what went on in my life to look back, and I can really recognize them. I came out of the chute with the ism. The alcohol was added and my disease was complete. I know that today. And things went on and on and on in my life. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I knew I loved to drink. And I knew that drinking, when I finally discovered that, just evened everything out. You hear a lot of talk, and you've heard it this weekend, about the hole in the middle. And about we take that drink and it just goes down and it just levels us. Well, it may do that for a while, but that changes if you're kind of drunk I was. Because the more I drank, the more I had to drink. Because I thought that drinking was my only solution. And for a while it was. And that's all that I knew how to do was to find another drink. And I did anything that was necessary to find that drink. Anything across this country. But I went to work for out of college with a very large company. And I came out of an environment that was, you hear a lot about the Catholics. Well, let me tell you something. Everything was just as rigid in the Baptist church. And I knew that everything I was doing was a sin. And I continued to do it. And once I got out, it was like letting midnight out of chute 9. And they started to ask me why I drank the way I did. Why I acted the way I acted when I drank. Why I said the things I said. And I knew that they knew about Len Wilder. And I would make a change if they didn't make it for me. I lost a lot of jobs. I made a lot of changes. All as a direct result of the disease of alcoholism. I lost that job. I had gotten involved, and I had an athletic background, and I had gotten involved with a particular school in Atlanta. And when this oil company fired me, another door opened, and I got re-involved in athletics. And here I was, a leader of men every day and a drunk every night, the Jekyll and Hyde that we know so much about. And it wasn't long till they were asking me those same questions. And I didn't have the answer. And it wasn't long before I lost that job. And it wasn't long before I had my little trailer behind my car going over the mountains of Tennessee back into Kentucky, because that's the only choice I had. And become willing to go into family business, which I wanted nothing to do with. And I looked around and all my friends were meeting their responsibilities. At least that's what I thought. That was my perception. They had jobs. A lot of them were married. And I thought, well, marriage is the answer. And here I am, an insecure, immature, irresponsible drunk. I don't have to tell you what happened there. Unfortunately for the lady that was involved, we had a baby daughter out of that marriage. And fortunately for them, they were able very quickly after the birth of that baby to get away from me and to go back to Chicago. I didn't see that daughter again for almost 11 years. And life just went on like that. They fired me from the family business. And I could take you all across these United States in and out of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I left Texas. I got off in 1964 in the summer at LAX. I'd never been to California. I'd run out of everything. I'd lost everything that had become important to me in my life. Everything. I'd lost family. I'd lost friends. I'd lost the benefits of a good education. I'd lost an athletic career. I'd lost it all. Because, as I told you up front, the bottle beat me to death and I was young. That had nothing to do with it. I was finished. But the only thing I knew was to drink. And I could give a talk on the last 7.5 months on the streets of Los Angeles. But I'm not going to do that. But that's where the disease had taken me, and that's where I never want to forget from whence I cometh. Never. I want to remember the years from the time I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and what got me there until those two men opened that maintenance shack. And the reason I was in that maintenance shack was because I had been put out of the Cecil Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Not by the hotel, but by the two winos that I was living with. I held on to the physical part because of my athletic background, and I thought, I'm in great shape. No, it beat me to death. That was gone. A lady walked up to me that happened to be a social worker. She said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "I don't know." And I asked her to take me to a place where a man would always give me a bed. And it wasn't far from the Bimini. And he didn't have anything to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. But he gave me a bed for about a week, and I had no money. And I knew there were warrants out for my arrest in 4 states. And he finally said, "Len, I can't keep you anymore." So I got a maintenance shack in the back. And that's where they put me. And this social worker went home and called her family doctor. And he had a patient that was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he and another man came. And they're the ones that opened that door. And I tried to get up off that floor, tell them who I was. And I was a sick, dying drunk. And they were to put me in a place for a couple of weeks because I was in bad shape, called the Beverly Lake on Fairfax Avenue. That was the only detox we had in Los Angeles. And when I came out of there, these men had arranged, and they'd talked to Pat where I went to the Bimini. Back to the Bimini where I'd been put out of. I'd been put out of the Royal Palms. I'd been put out of the Shoreham. And I became a dishwasher. And lying in that sanitarium, in that bed, I knew my life was over. I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work. I knew there was no God, because look where I was. But I cried out in silent desperation one more time, "Help." And little did I know I'd had my last drink. Little did I know that my new beginning had started. But it had. And I'm so grateful. And I'm going to just take a few minutes. We all need to go home. But I want to talk how all of these programs have affected my life. Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Alateen. But I was at the Bimini, and We had meetings there, and they would take us out to meetings. And I was rummy. And all I could do was wash dishes and go to meetings. And I heard a man speak after I'd been there a little while, not too long, at the Arlington Group. And I heard this man's story, and I heard him talk, and I thought, no one can live the way that man talks. No one. And a couple of weeks later, they took me to West Los Angeles, to a place called Ohio Street. I heard this man talk again. And he came up to me after the meeting. He said, "How you doing, son?" I said, "Terrific." He knew better. He pulled out a card and asked someone for a pen, wrote his name on the back of the card with a phone number. It said Chuck C with a phone number. I didn't know who Chuck C was. I didn't care. But shortly thereafter, and I know there's some members here from the Roxbury Men's Stag, I was taken to that group. And that was Chuck's home group. And he came over to me and he said, "You didn't call." And I said, "No." He said, "If you don't call tomorrow, I'm going to call Pat." And that was the man that was the founder of the Mary Lynn Foundation. And I was afraid of Pat. So I called him. I had no idea who he was. These men all arranged where he would come by the Bimini and once a week anyway and pick me up. And sometimes I could get a pass and I would ride the bus and transfer and go to his office. And he took me all over greater Los Angeles. And people loved him. People loved him wherever we went. And he carried the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He told me all about his relationship with Bill and Lois and about his wife Elsa, whom I had not met, and about the early beginnings. And I heard his story. And you know, the old timers did that. And I was just hanging on. The steps, I wasn't capable of getting in the steps. I tell you what kept me here in the beginning was the fellowship. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never want to forget that. Before and after the meetings and the things we did together. As crazy as I was and the rest of the people I hung with were. But we were hanging on to something called sobriety. Night by night, sometimes hour by hour. I used to go back to that detox place. A lady named Jeannie was the owner with a doctor. She was an RN and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would sit there. I was too terrified that I was going to drink. I would sit there with her and she'd go down to Farmer's Market and shop for food and I'd go with her. And then we'd stop at Fairfax at that great deli that's still there and she'd buy me a bowl of soup. But whatever it took, I hung on. And I don't want to forget that. And then finally I left the...
Legal to drink in Arkansas. And he got drunk.
I'd get up every morning and walk 2.5 miles to Radford Street to the North Hollywood Clubhouse. And I'd walk in there. And the old timers back then, guys, were tough. You know. And they'd say, "Get behind the coffee bar." And I could do that. Wash the coffee mugs. We had mugs. We didn't have the styrofoam cups. I was in West Los Angeles and I'd go to meetings. I'd get in cars and I'd go to meetings everywhere. I was at West LA and Ohio Street again. And they said the coffee maker had gotten drunk. Can anybody make coffee? And I raised my hand. And I started to make coffee for that group. And I would go in and I would set up and that kitchen's still there today. Make the coffee, serve it over the counter with the mugs, wash the coffee pots out afterwards. And before I knew it, I was making coffee for 5 groups, 3 of them in that building. I didn't know that was being of service. I just knew it made me feel better. And it goes on from there and there and there. You come to a conference like this and you see so many involved, so many commitments. That's what we're about. You talk about home groups, they're here. We all have home groups. You go to your home group, you get commitments. I've been involved in every level of service. What a gift it's been. What a gift it's been. I understand what's going on. I've been on the other side, rather than standing at a podium. Those are the people that are serving us. The ones that reach out to the other alcoholics. We made a lot of 12-step calls back then. That's what before treatment really came into fashion. And I have nothing against treatment. But I'm going to tell you, I got fashion. You know, I got sober the old-fashioned way. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that. However you get here, thank God you're here. We've got a seat for everyone. And we love you. And you may not understand that, but you will if you'll stay. And I'll tell you three or four things that went on in my life from that point on. My total income the first year I was sober was $1,237. And I was overpaid. But little by little, some things started to happen. But the main thing in my life, I showed up daily, two and three times, and took my seat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sitting in a meeting, and I'd gotten a job that paid me a little something. In Brentwood, California, that group's still going today. In my second year of sobriety, and a beautiful lady, she was 25 years old, walked to the podium to read chapter 5. And it's a program of attraction, and I wanted what she had. And her name was Pamela Floyd, and it became Pamela Floyd Wilder. And she was a great member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was, any of you ladies in here that have gone to woman anywhere in the country, she was the founder of that in San Diego. It's spread across the country now. And we had a great life. We both were working, living in an apartment. We moved to Laguna Beach. We'd had our first child at the Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles, which was a daughter. We moved to Laguna, and our house was kind of the center of everything that went on. We had program people in and out of there on a daily basis. We had functions. We loved it. We were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I need to tell you before I go on, I told you about that baby I had right out of college in a couple of years, and I didn't see forever. And I got to the eighth and ninth step, and I took those, and my original sponsor said to me, finally, you forgot something. I hadn't forgotten it, because I had so many fears, but I had that fear of abandonment, that fear of rejection, fear of failure. But that fear of rejection was right there. I put that aside. And he said, do it. And he told me exactly how to do it, to sit down and write her a letter. And I have a manipulative part of me, and I didn't want to do it that way. So I was pulling a lawyer off bar stools in Los Angeles, trying to get visitation rights, and he was successful to that daughter. And I called her mother, and I said, I'm coming back to Chicago. I want to see Gail, and that's our daughter. And I hung up. I didn't tell my sponsor. I got on an airplane. I'd done everything but take a drink. I was on the worst dry drunk I've ever been on. I got off that airplane. I went to a downtown hotel in Chicago. You taught me well. I called Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, you're two blocks from a meeting. It was a meeting called the Mustard Seed in downtown Chicago. And I walked in that meeting at 6 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, I walked out less crazy. I went back to my hotel room. I called. Her mother answered, said, Lynn, she doesn't want to see you. And thank God it happened that way, because it put me on my knees that night. And I said, God, you take it, please. And I got up and wrote both she and her mother a separate letter of amends. And I went to that hotel lobby the next morning, and I got a stamp, and I mailed those two letters, and I got on an airplane, and I came back to California. And I was given another freedom, another gift, and I let go of it. It wasn't long after that, her mother called and said she'd like to see me. And I was coming out of New York, where I'd been on a business trip, and we had arranged to meet at O'Hara, which is the airport in Chicago, and it was a blizzard. And we left, and I was scheduled to stop in Chicago for a four-hour period and then come on to L.A. And they said, we're not going to get into Chicago. We got into Chicago. I thought she'll never get to the airport, and she did. And I was able to sit across the table from that young lady and to tell her I loved her. And that relationship started from there. She's been in California for years. Her mother had remarried, came out when she graduated from college. And I sat between her mother. We had two children, but then we've had a son too that was born in Laguna Beach. And I sat between her mother and Pam. And as Gail walked up on that stage to get her diploma, her mother turned to me and said, "Lynn, I can't thank you enough for what you've done for Gail." I said, "Don't thank me. Thank Alcoholics Anonymous." Yeah. Thank Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's gone on, and she's very much a part of our life. She went on to law school. She's been a lawyer for years and lives in Los Angeles, and we see her a lot. And life went on. 1984, I talked on a Saturday night at a convention in Florida. I went to the room. I called home, and Pam was in the hospital. I called the hospital, and she said, "It's nothing. It's a lower back pain." 10.5 months later, she was dead. It was leukemia. You surrounded us. You being members of Alcoholics Anonymous, members of Al-Anon, and members of Alateen. Whether we were at UCLA and you were standing in line to give blood, whether you were in Laguna Beach taking care of our children, whatever you were doing. And I've seen this go on and on and on through our fellowships over the years. That's what we do. We take care of one another. That's what we're put here for. I have found that out through this process. We love one another. We take care of one another. Thank God for that. And we were all in the room when she stepped into the next room. And I had no idea what the mothers of the world do. But I started to find out pretty quickly. The one thing you'd taught me was honesty. You told me when you brought me back here to tell the truth, I said, "Which truth?" I didn't know the truth. I had so many secrets that my secrets had secrets. But little by little, through that uncovering process, we learn to do that. Who are we kidding if we don't tell the truth? We're kidding ourselves. This thing is an inside job. It's like taking an inside shower. People go out. I've seen a lot of people go out over the years that are going to meetings. We initially want to say, "Well, they got uninvolved." Well, maybe, yeah, probably did get uninvolved. But they hadn't got honest with themselves. That's what I found out. That's what I found out in my life as I look back. And I heard Tom and Gene talk about it this morning. This is a living program. We live life. That's what we're here for. You got to get that you don't drink and use. You got to get that. And then there's life. And we are given the tools. We are given the tools. It's up to us as to what we do with them. It's that simple. And life started on. You're going to go all, there are going to be a lot of bumps in the road in every area of your life. But if you're on the same path with the rest of us, you're going to be okay. I don't know what's going on in any of your lives today, but I can tell you whatever it is going to change. I will promise you that. I don't know, I can't tell you how, but it'll change. I never tell a newcomer it's going to get better. I don't know that. But I can tell you that your life is going to change, because it will. And it does. And life went on. And those children started to grow up. And I had to become willing to go back in the corporate world, because I was upside down when Pam died financially. And I'd get on that freeway every morning to go to downtown Los Angeles. And rather than saying, "Why me?" I'd say, "Thank you, God, for the opportunity. Thank you, God, for the opportunity." I'd hit that freeway, the 5 freeway, at 4:30 in the morning. Now, coming home at night is a little different. And sometimes I'd get home at 9 o'clock, 9:30, And I'd go to bed and say, thank you, God, for the opportunity. And I'd get up and do it all over again. We do whatever is necessary. Willingness is a key. It's been the primary key for me, and we've all got to become willing. Now, I'm going to back up a little and tell you a couple of things. Chuck had talked to me for a long time. Well, not that long, 2.5 years, about his relationship with Bill. I said, oh, I'd love to meet Bill, our co-founder. The end of my 1967, I got a call from him that he and Elsa, that Elsa was his wife, were going to be in Connecticut, and if I could get to New York, I could meet Bill. And I still get goosebumps talking about this, even this many years later. I caught the red eye and got back to New York and took a cab to the old General Service office. I spent the afternoon listening to those two men. I've never, ever forgotten it. They asked me to have dinner with them before I caught the red eye back. I had dinner with Lois and Bill and Chuck and Elsa. My cup runneth over.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I want to talk for a moment about another program, and that program is Al-Anon. Yeah. 46 years ago, my original sponsor said, you're going to Al-Anon. I said, why? He said, because you need to. And you didn't ask a lot of questions back then. So I found a men's stag in Malibu. I went to 6 meetings. Everything went in one ear and out the other. I said, I don't need this. I've got Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you, looking back, I needed it then. But I met Lois. And prior to my coming into Al-Anon 28 and a half years ago, I would be with her in Arkansas and different places, and I got to know her. And Elsa Chamberlain was like a surrogate mother to me. She was fabulous. Chuck would say to me sometime when I'd go up on the hill, well, you seem to want to get in the room and talk to her more than me. And sometimes I did. Lois and I were leaving the Dallas-Fort Worth area sometime in the mid-70s. She was going home to New York. I was going to New York for business for Monday morning. I sat with her on the airplane on that ride back, and I asked her this question. Lois, what do you think the most important thing is we have to remember? And she thought for a minute, and then she said, the willingness to let go. The willingness to let go, and I've never forgotten that. It's so, so true. And my relationship went on with that lady. She talked in Palm Springs, her last talk in California. I think it was 82, and I was part of that meeting. She was the Al-Anon, and I was the alcoholic. We took her home with us. She had some people with her that were taking her around then from Fishkill, New York. I said, what do you want to do? Because the women, the big Monday meeting in Laguna Beach that started in Elsa's home, wanted to talk on Monday. She said, I really would like to go to the San Diego Zoo. Well, we took her to the San Diego Zoo, and some of those women still haven't gotten over it. They blame me for it. But, you know, she was an incredible woman. The strength that women like Elsa and Lois had, I've never forgotten. And it goes on, and look at the Al-Anons around you today and what this program means. It's unbelievable. And Chuck had died in 1984, and Pam died in 1985, and 28 years and a half ago, the week after Thanksgiving, I called Elsa, and we had lunch. And I talked, and I knew I needed more. I've always been active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always will be. And she looked at me with that little smile and she said, honey, I think you need Al-Anon. And I want to tell you that I came into the program of Al-Anon not as someone in AA that had a lot of years, but I came into Al-Anon as a newcomer. And before I could really get with any men, there weren't a lot around. Those women gave me the foundation. And I will be forever grateful for that. And my home group in Al-Anon, as I said when I stood up in the long-timers' tea yesterday, is the Tuesday night men's stag. And this coming Tuesday, we're going to celebrate 26 years. Last year, we celebrated 25. We had Larsine and Butch come down, and Larsine blew them all out of their seats. We got Karen A., and you're invited this Tuesday if you want to come. But I'm just going to say this. Al-Anon has made a tremendous change in my life. Because you see, the two programs go hand in hand. And thank God for it. Now, I want to tell you one other little story. A couple. I want to tell you about Alateen. I was sitting in my office in Newport Beach, somewhere in, I don't know, the mid-70s maybe, earlier. A lady called me, and I knew her well. She said, Lynn, I'm head of SCAC. Now, SCAC is the Southern California Alateen Conference. Good, good. She said, we've never had an alcoholic talk at SCAC. Would you come? I said, sure. She said, it's in Santa Barbara. I said, sure, thank you. As that time approached, and particularly the week of, my head was telling me, why did I accept this? Why am I going to Santa Barbara? Why to spend a weekend with a bunch of kids? Yak, 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 yak. They called me 2 days before and said, do you have room in your car? I said, for what? Three Alateens didn't have rides. I thought, my God, why me? I rode all the way to Santa Barbara listening to those teenagers. That night, they had a meeting, then they had skits, and they got my attention. The next day, all day, they had meetings out on the grass. It was at UC Santa Barbara, all over. They had worked. I sat in those meetings and listened to those kids all day. I went to my room that Saturday night before I spoke to those kids. And I got on my knees and I said, God, help me to be as honest with these kids as they've been with me. They opened me up. They opened me up from another perspective. Al-Anon opened me up at a deeper level. Alcoholics Anonymous and all the others have kept me balanced. They go hand in hand. It's a family disease, it's a family recovery, and that's what you've got here, which is fantastic. And I'm so grateful for all of them. I went back to Laguna Beach. I volunteered to be a co-sponsor of an Alateen group, and I did that for about 10 years. And what an experience that was. What an experience that was. I got on the Alateen circuit. They had me come to Texas. They had me come to Oklahoma. I went to Arkansas. But I went to TAC 1 year. I just want to tell you this real quickly. And it was at a big lake out of Austin, Texas. And they bus kids in, and a lot of them from different parts of Texas, and they'd raise money all year to come to this conference. It was called Texas Alateen Conference. And I talked on a Saturday night, and a sponsor came to me after I talked, and he said that we've got a young man that wants to come talk to you, but he's afraid to. And he told me the story. He said he came to the bus late as we were leaving Texas City. And he had no money. And he didn't have anything packed or anything. He just had his clothes on. He was crying. We put him on the bus and we brought him up here, and he hadn't taken his clothes off all weekend. They had me in a cabin. So he brought him out to me, and I hugged him. And I asked him if he'd spend the night with me. And he acted like he didn't want to. I could tell he was scared to death. And I put my arms around him again and told him I loved him. And he went to that cabin with me, and I said, take your clothes off. I got a couple of big T-shirts. He didn't want to do that. I said, come on, I'll give you these. He finally did. And he had cuts all over his body where his father had taken chains and beaten him, who was an alcoholic and a drunken stupor. And he was afraid if he were to take those clothes off, they wouldn't let him come to the Alateen Conference. I let him sleep in the bed with me. I did what we all do. I loved him. I told him that. I stayed in touch with this young man. I said at Texas A&M, when that kid graduated from college, he'd gotten involved through our fellowships. He got married. I went to his wedding. He's got 3 children today. Recovery. That's from an Alateen. Recovery from an Al-Anon perspective. Recovery as an alcoholic. It's what we do here. It's what we all do. And that's why the South Bay family meetings are so, so important. We all get here. Prayer is so critical to me. You know, we've heard our 3 legacies. Everybody talk about them for Alcoholics Anonymous all week. Recovery, unity, and service. We're all full. We're going to go out of here full. Prayer works. I sometimes question God's presence. Deneen and I've got a lot going on in our life right now with the active part of alcoholism we have the last year. It's tough. It's tough when your kids or your significant others or other people are involved in the active part of the disease. But we come here because we can turn to each other and we can talk about it and we can share. And we turn to our higher power. And sometimes I think prayer isn't working. But I don't stop praying. I don't stop showing up and taking my seat, be it in Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon. Because that's an absolute must for all of us. I was raising those kids and they were a little ahead of me. And I'd gone to work for the corporate company. And I was rumming around, and this is about 17 years ago, and they came to me one day and said, have you seen the new lady that walked in here? I said, no, I haven't seen her. I wasn't really interested in seeing her. But then I heard her laughter. And then I saw her. I changed my mind. And then I asked her to go to lunch. And then we developed a friendship, which you taught me how to do here. I had one thing in mind prior to you teaching me how we treat the opposite sex, and you taught me that. And we developed an incredible friendship before we became lovers. And she's here with me this weekend. And she's a godsend. And Carol M. reminds me that she's responsible for my meeting her. She likes to tell me that all the time. But what a lady and what a gift. We're blessed. All of us. We've got 5 grandkids. We've got some things going on in that area too. But we've got Al-Anon. We've got Alcoholics Anonymous. And Deneen has said to me this weekend, maybe I'm going to suggest that 1 or 2 of them go to Alateen. Whatever it takes, we know we're in here. There are thousands and thousands and thousands that are out there that don't know, that maybe never get through these doors. But when we go out of here and you're sitting here with your home groups, but when we go back into our home group, if wherever we go into the community, we are examples We carry the message. We carry the message of recovery, all of us, because God could and would and does, and he does it through us. And that's where I see every day, that's where God comes to me. God comes to me through you people, absolutely every day. And I start my day with prayer, and I ask him to please show me what I can do to serve him. And a lot of it has to do in program, but a lot of it has to do in the workplace or in family or in other areas. Because that's the gift we've been given. And thank God for it. Thank God for it. And Deneen and I enjoyed things together. And one night I'm leaving the company and I'm dressed in like I am now. I got a tie on. She said, "Where are you going dressed like that? You got a date?" I said, "No, I'm going to talk." "About what?" I said, "I'm going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting." Well, the blood ran out of her face. She said, "You're an alcoholic?" I said, "Absolutely. Come on, go with me." "Oh, no, I couldn't do that." It was St. Jude's Hospital. It was birthday night. And I talked her into doing it. We walked in that room. The ceiling was coming off. There was so much energy. We sat up front. She didn't look right. She didn't look left. She'd never heard my story. We left, went to the Orange Circle for coffee, and her eyes were the size of saucers. She looked over at me, and she said, "Do you think they thought I was alcoholic?" I said, "Absolutely not. They were so self-obsessed, they didn't even know you were there." And she's a love, and I'm blessed to have her in my life, and I love her very much. And you know what? I love all of you. And life goes on. And life goes on. And Helen said to me this morning, "David," I said, "You see, standing, isn't it wonderful?" She said, "I'm going to kick his butt." So I won't tell you that again. All right. So anyway, thank you for this opportunity. What an incredible weekend. I mean, the musicians last night, not only the meeting, but the jam sessions there, I've never experienced anything like that. I have never, ever, ever experienced anything like that. And David came in, made his appearance, sat down next to me, and he turned to me and he said, "Once in a lifetime. Once in a lifetime." And it was unbelievable. The veterans, everything that's gone on this weekend. Thank all of you. You're beautiful and I love you, and I'm going to close with the story I always close with. And it's the story of a man that owned a fine Swiss watch. And he loved it more than any possession he'd ever had. And it stopped running on him one day, and he would wind it and it would stop running. And he went through a series of watchmakers. And he knew not what else to do. And finally, one morning, one last time, he was sitting in his den with his little desk lamp on, and one more time he's winding that watch. And as he turned it over and started to put it on his wrist, he saw what he thought looked like a scratch. And he got his magnifying glass out, and he looked very closely, and there were two inscriptions, very small. And they said very simply, "In case of trouble, return to Maker." In case of trouble, return to Maker. Because God could and would and does. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love being sober. And I love all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. That was awesome.
We We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.